chamber.
Yep, yep. Let's maybe pass these things around.
Lisa, do you remember?
Oh, hi.
My wife.
Yeah, he's also in the city attorney's office.
Yes.
Who's that, Lisa?
Gail, so she'll be here, Marcia.
Oh, okay. So how come we're not meeting in the other room for this? We weren't sure how many people were gonna show up, so.
Oh, okay.
We planned for many.
Yeah.
Figure planning for many and having few is better than planning for few and having many.
Okay.
Somebody purporting to be Social Security. It's a scam.
Yeah, you know, I just give them my bank account information and they leave me alone.
That's perfect.
I don't know why I didn't think of that.
Then your bank account looks really good the next day.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, that's all the agenda.
Your Social Security number, you just put it all on the table.
Yeah. If you want to wait or jump into it, feel free.
Why wait?
Why wait? Let's jump into it.
Go jump.
All right. First big decision is who wants to lead the meeting of your committee, Al and Fred. You guys can decide. That person can call the meeting to order.
Why don't you lead the meeting?
Okay.
All right.
So let's call to order, have a roll call.
We'll just note that the committee's here, and I'll do a visual and I'll write everyone's name down.
Okay, let's discuss schedule of public meetings.
All right, so Fidel has done a lot of homework, so we have a few things to share with you as kind of kickoff material and let you know what stuff we've looked at. First is just to remind ourselves of the background. So Fidel put together a chronology of events so far, not including this meeting. So it was already way back in June of 2017 when we got the shot across the bow from the attorney claiming that the city was violating the California Voting Rights Act, and that set in motion then the process of the city considering what to do. The city ultimately held a meeting and decided to move forward with converting to district elections from at-large elections. And those are the sequencing of the steps and the reports that we went through, culminating with the April 8th, 2019 adoption of Resolution 5880, which established your ad hoc committee that will do the work to kind of set up the process. And that's really what we want to start talking about today, is what's that process going to look like. So Fidela has provided us also with some information about state laws that apply to this process specifically of going from at-large elections to district elections. So we do have a framework to follow from state law, and we don't need to go through that in detail, but that important to that is kind of the timing. When does that stuff start to come into play? And really, the great news is we're ahead of the game. So your council decided to get started at, you know, Lisa and Gail's urging sooner than later. And so, city entered an agreement that gave us until the 2022 election in order to get this stuff in place, with anticipation that we're going to be using the results of the 2020 census to educate that process. So obviously then the nuts and bolts work of drafting maps, district maps, will be occurring after we have access to that 2020 information. So that's and that short time frame, kind of shorter time frame, a lot of cities are going through now with these companies that we'll talk about in a minute. You know, that they have like, you know, less than a year, you know, months, not years, to go through this process. And that may be why one of the companies we reached out to, you know, that national whatever
Demographics Corporation,
who helped us, do a little bit of work when we were considering the Voting Rights Act allegations. That may be why they're not calling us back. They know the terms of our settlement, and they're like, we don't have time for that. We got these cities that are on months deadlines that we're trying to rush with, and we know they've got years, so they're not even calling us back. But that's kind of an aside. The important thing is, what do we do then in advance of the mandatory process, the actual drafting of the maps? And we want to start to talk about that too. Importantly, there's a good opportunity to do a very robust, public outreach process and think about how are we going to engage the public in this process. And so that we thought would be the subject of kind of our meeting today, is start to go through a little bit of background, but to talk about what that process might look like and how it might involve both this committee and then after the committee, using consultant, that sort of thing. We do think, as the council's aware, that we ought to be hiring a consultant to help us with this. As I mentioned, National Demographic Corporation didn't call us back, despite Fidela's reaching out to him multiple times, and then we thought, well, maybe they don't return city clerk's call. Maybe if the city manager called, they'd return my call. They'll return my call.
I thought they'd return my call either.
So we couldn't get anybody to return our calls, emails, calls, whatever, from that company. Then we called this other company called Redistricting Partners, who are apparently the two main players in California. And Redistricting Partners, one of the principals there, picked up the phone and talked to us and was very generous with his time. So that's encouraging, I guess, in terms of that. And so we asked the fellow from Redistricting Partners to give us a proposal, kind of explain to him over the phone what we were looking for. So we expect to be getting that soon. In our conversation with him, we asked him about, okay, so do you do do you do mapping tools too? Because we understand some cities, put up on their website or independently on a separate website for redistricting these mapping tools where people get to play around with boundaries and submit electronically maps. And he was kind of like, oh, yeah, those things are out there. We don't do it, but these other companies, the main players that do it around here are this company called Aptitude that we have on there, and ESRI, which I've heard of ESRI because they work with planning departments a lot. I think it's all caps, ESRI, ESRI. And they, you hire them separately, and they do these sites. And he did not sound real bullish on those things. He sounded kind of...
You mentioned Google, something about Google.
Yeah, he said. Well, what he said was not a lot of people really get how to use those tools, and you're better off, directing people to Google to see it, or providing, physical maps or maps that people can draw on and submit or come to a place, than the high-tech tools that cost a lot of money, and he didn't see them as necessarily being more beneficial than more simple tools, I guess, to help people through. Making choices about mapping or recommendations.
So what,
about
why
mapping.
Wouldn't we just have a public process where we have a map and people get to react to it?
Well,
rather than looking at 27 versions of people who really, don't know some of these.
Yeah, well,
district map.
Those are as we get into this in more detail, maybe those are things a consultant kind of help us think through that involve both, looking at state law, what the state law requires, and then most effectively getting people's input. And how do you do that? Do you do it through mapping, or do you put out a map first and then have them respond to it? Or do you help them? You say, here's kind of the parameters, help them initially draw it. I'm not quite sure how other cities have done it. I mean, this is the first time I've done it. I don't know if anybody else has feedback.
Well, I know in Santa Barbara, Well, one of the things when people were playing with it online that they were able to do is because if they change a line, then it changes the demographics. It has all that embedded into it.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at, I don't know what we're looking at in terms of a majority-minority district, but if you're looking at trying to do that or whatever, it gives you the demographics.
Yeah.
And just changing, you know, one street changes that information.
Yeah.
And I know Santa Barbara had quite a bit of input from people who recommended maps.
Who did those preliminary maps for us, you know, way back when we started doing this?
That was National Demographic Corporation.
Oh. And so the city of Santa Barbara used ESRI.
Okay.
They used NDC and ESRI.
Interesting. Okay.
So I didn't reach out to Santa Barbara to ask them how much they had to pay for that. And I don't know if it's based on size of city or the tool's the tool, you know. But we can get that information for your next meeting and find out if you're interested in exploring that tool.
Yeah, I think that would be probably good to at least have that information. I mean, one of the things I think what I'm thinking about is we're going to have to, I think the purpose of this is to be more inclusive to specific demographics because which is the reason they filed the suit initially. You know, and that being said, somehow, when this is all said and done, I would guess somewhere in there we're going to have to create a minority, whichever it is, district, somewhere in there. So I think there's that, and also I believe we have to decide whether we're going to go to five districts or four districts and five districts and elected mayor, you know, that's another decision that we've got to work on. And what does that do? I mean, I'm just thinking at it from a point of view of if we go to making sure we have one majority-minority district, we want to make sure that there's enough input from that district to be able to create a district that's involved.
So tell me, because this is something I don't understand necessarily, is there a connection between creating representative districts and elected mayor or not, or is that a separate decision about going to elected mayor or not?
That's kind of, my understanding is it's kind of a separate thing, except given the size of the city, it would seem to me to have five districts and an elected mayor.
So the connection is then you have one less district. You have four districts, and then a mayor can represent
right. Or
everybody.
You could have five districts, and then those five council members
appoint a mayor.
Those are two.
Just so there's a vote in the case of a tie. There's always a vote.
So that is a choice. Yeah.
Well, either way, you have five.
Yeah,
is that a choice that cities have as far as the government code allows us to decide whether we're going to have?
I mean,
I don't know that.
Districts or five districts.
Yeah, and that's also something that we agreed to. So that's written.
Oh, it was.
We agreed to which?
We have those two choices.
Oh, okay.
In the settlement
okay.
agreement, that's what
yeah.
it states. So it says we can either have four districts and at-large mayor, or five districts, and then the mayor is appointed by the city council members.
And we're going to decide that now, or shortly.
I'm curious what other things were in the settlement agreement in terms of, I mean, is it addressed about a majority-minority district, or not at all, or? Because if not, then that changes things.
Yeah, I'm sorry, we didn't bring copies of the settlement, but we can certainly make copies of it for everybody.
Was it attached to the staff report?
Yeah. That'll make it a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty broad settlement agreement.
Okay.
That's what I understand that all local agencies kind of settle according to the same things, that they just have to comply with the California Voters' Rights Act. Something else to consider is that there are currently two pending bills before the state legislature. One is called the Fair Maps Act, and so it would require, if it passes, it would require city councils and other local governments to use standardized fair redistricting criteria that prioritize communities when drawing district lines. So there would be some sort of, you know, additional structure in that act so it's worthwhile to see where that goes and whether or not that passes before we get too far down the line.
But it seems if we don't do that, then the same group of people are going to sue us again.
If we didn't follow whatever the law was when it was passed. Yeah. So there's no, I think the point I'm trying to make is...
I mean, even if we didn't, let's say there was no law, if we didn't make an effort to be inclusive,
right,
then the same people who sued us in the first place would sue us again.
No, and I think the difference is, I believe in the Fair Maps Act, have you looked at this one? I think it sets out certain criteria. So maybe we have to follow those specific criteria rather than just using fair criteria, period.
Do you have a bill number for that one?
It's AB 849.
Okay, thanks. And legislation like that might give us some parameters for what's our starting place, right? Because we heard from this national demographics guy, I remember he said, usually the way he approaches the work, his first starting point is to see, can you draft fair districts based on every existing council member's place of residence? So the first thing they do is that possible?
You know? And that's what I've heard.
And so that's always the starting point. And it's like, is that going to be the starting point anymore, given the movement of law? And is that even possible? Is it even an exercise we ought to go through? So that's something we can look at from both the legal standpoint and then the standpoint of, you know, what's the interest of the committee.
Well, and on that one, I mean, it's what happens when you've got two places where there's two council members who live very close to each other. We have that going on now in two places.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It just makes it more challenging, I imagine, to draft fair districts and depending on what that is.
That just won't be the goal, to have one. I mean, just one.
So.
What you said, there were two pieces of legislation.
You know, that comment you made is interesting, because I attended the City of Camarillo's redistricting, their third meeting. Uh-huh. And they have a community you may be familiar with called Leisure Village.
Sure.
They carved that right down the middle.
Oh.
So.
Because they have two people.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was carved, but it worked. But it is pretty large. But they felt that a portion of it had enough of interest. They lumped it with that community that, as you're going up the grade, that's over on the left-hand side. So with that whole area.
Camarillo Springs.
That's it. So they kind of lumped it over with that area. Yeah.
Okay. But we could do that in Concha Loma. You could put the dividing line on Cayocho, and then I'll be with the condos. All the condos up there, and Greg will be. from his house up to Linden. I mean, you could do that.
You could.
Yeah. So those are choices to be made, and the starting.
But
point,
I'm not going to run again anyway.
Starting point is the law, and then it's also, can you get fair districts? Are you even motivated to do that? You know, those are all things that your committee will be considering. So in terms of just keeping on consultants for a second. So this fellow was inclined initially, when we were talking to him from Redistricting Partners, to say, well, you really don't need me for a while. And we said, no, we really want to engage you sooner than later and think about, you know, the upfront work we want to do to try to sow the seeds, if you will, to get good public participation in the mapping process. So he said he would keep that in mind as he drafted his proposal for us. So when we get that proposal again, I think at your next meeting we can share that and kind of talk it through and say, you know, do we think it's a good proposal? We want to just negotiate with Redistricting Partners, or do we really want to go out and solicit proposals from others?
So when we were dragged into this, we had some input, I think, from the attorney's office, that there was like a pending litigation for this out of the city of Santa Monica. And we thought, well, maybe this is a test case we could hitch our wagon to.
Maybe.
And
did
we
change
the
game?
I don't know whatever happened to that
information.
I think it's Poway versus the City of Santa Monica. I don't think that decision is where, I haven't looked at this in a while. I've only sort of learned of it through a presentation I attended last fall. The cases that have gone to litigate whether or not they're going to do at large or district-based elections have spent a lot of money. in order to do so in a lot of time. So I think the idea behind going the settlement agreement approach is that the city would move towards district-based elections in order to avoid that costly process, without admitting that the current system is in any way not reflective of the requirements of the California Voting Rights Act. So I don't think the outcome, I think that outcome is still out there. I mean, I think it's...
It hasn't been resolved yet.
I can't remember if they were planning to appeal or not, but it was a basically substantial litigation. We can look into that further to see if it's informative for any of the decisions we need to make.
Santa Barbara spent
$600,000, I believe, to get to the settlement.
So yeah, to actually
get to this point where they settled and decided to do redistricting after that.
Yeah, they spent several hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Ventura and Oxnard also both went through this redistricting process recently. They did it during the 90-day safe harbor period. So when a plaintiff brings a lawsuit, the city has 45 days to respond and then 90 days to go through this whole redistricting process. So they were on a much tighter timeline, but fortunately through the settlement agreement that we have, we don't have to follow. We just have to be done by 2022. So there's some benefits of having this longer process. We can have more public input.
And I see we have laid out on this one sheet is the hearings that are required.
And the timing of the hearings.
And the timing of the hearings. Now, would these hearings would have nothing to do, from what I'm reading, with the maps?
Well, the first two hearings are to establish the criteria for the maps and the sequencing of the elections. And then the following two hearings are to select your map. And then the final hearing, the fifth hearing, would be to approve the resolution and your maps, or the ordinance and your maps.
And so I think that would look, presumably we'd be using a consultant, so the consultant would probably draw one or more potential districting maps that complied with all the criteria, and then we would take in and consider all, I think this is what they did in Oxnard, they took in and considered all of the publicly drawn maps and really only presented the publicly drawn maps that complied with the criteria at the meeting, and that's what the city council or the committee had to consider as potential maps, and that's what was presented at these meetings.
Yeah, so there's some stuff in there for us to discuss in terms of understanding the process here. So Fidel and Jenna help me and everyone get a grasp on this. So that consultant prepares maps and publishes, if you will, maps. Is there, in terms of the process, is all that public? In other words, the first time the map is revealed for public input, is that this, you know, these public meetings? Or is this committee's job? Do they have the opportunity to work with a consultant and fiddle around with it and tweak things? I'm making an assumption that that's what you guys anticipate doing. Or do we just use this committee to set parameters for that process? The guy does his work, and these meetings are where all that sausage making goes on.
So we could do both of those, and I think that's a discussion. So this is not a Brown Act committee. So okay. We don't have to open it up to the public. That's how it was created. It was created as an ad hoc subcommittee. So part of the, I think, intent or the thought process was that it's easier for a subcommittee to work with the consultant and give advice, look at things, talk to them. You'd have direct access to staff as well. And then it also sort of narrows the decisions that are ahead or that are put before the city council, so that discussions really only revolve around the maps that are legally compliant.
So then theoretically we would, in this committee working with the consultant, we might create two or three different possibilities,
mm-hmm.
and then those would be presented to the public at the same time as the council, or those would be presented to the council and then the public would weigh in on them?
So per the, I think this is from the elections code, per the elections code, we have to submit draft maps that were, that the city council is considering in a public meeting. And we have to have two meetings held, no more than 45.
Within 30 days.
45.
Is it 45?
Yeah, 45 days for the consideration of the maps. So all of the maps would be considered at those two meetings. It looks like just kind of, you know, we took a look at, it was either the city of Santa Barbara or the city of Oxnard, kind of the process that they went through. And they held multiple public meetings, which we could also do, you know, as we kind of, okay, we're going to consider maps at three public meetings or three public hearings, however we want to do that. I don't know, do you know if the city of Santa Barbara had an ad hoc committee or the city of Oxnard? Oxnard may not have had an ad hoc committee because they were on a 90-day timeline.
Right,
so it was
right.
just staff working with the consultant to put everything together and then presenting.
Simi Valley entered into an agreement, and I don't believe they had an ad hoc. They entered into like 130, 150-day period. So I think the only one that I know of is Goleta. They struck the deal to have the ad hoc committee in their agreement where... You know, we didn't have that, but they had it there. There's really the only ones that I, there might have been like, maybe Santa Monica might have had one. I think I remember reading one other. Maybe it was Santa Monica that had an ad hoc.
I think because we have more time, we're able to create the ad hoc committee and go through more of this process.
So it's possible that that could be part of the work of the ad hoc committee. You need to make decisions about, you know, do you work with staff behind the scenes or do you make these also public meetings? Those are decisions to be made. We provide a little bit outline here about outreach, so I think it would be appropriate for this committee to work on kind of an outreach plan with the consultant. Coincidentally, you know, we're doing some of that work now collaboratively with the county on the census. So they're thinking about, you know, how do we do outreach to hard-to-reach communities? You know, and these kind of things here, local churches, using our neighbor program that's just kind of piloting right now, connecting with the Los Promotores group, you know, all those kind of ideas are, you know, right out of kind of a census playbook about connecting with entities in the community that might already have established connection with hard-to-reach communities, communities that don't generally get out, minority communities, socioeconomically disadvantaged communities. How do we reach those folks and how do we get them engaged, effectively engage them in the process? So that work, you know, is, we might be able to kind of, you know, mimic, if you will, or learn some lessons from the census process itself. And then reflect that in our outreach. Something to think about. Mm-hmm. They'd probably be going on at the same time.
I remember that whoever they are, NDR, whoever we reasoned before, they had these sample maps, and they said they had identified two potential districts where a Latino candidate had a good chance to win an office.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and we don't know how many, you know, maps. Are there 10 potential maps, or are there only two or three potential maps? And that is, you know, that's something that is, at this point, premature, because we don't have all the census data. So once the census data comes in, NDC will rely on, I'm assuming, a demographer to look at all of those results.
I think that they did that in that exercise, but then the caveat was we've got to wait till the 2020.
Right.
Census to actually refine what it's going to be.
And we don't get those numbers till 2021, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be educational, but with that said, Carpinteria is not going to change dramatically, right? So I think...
Seven people
a little tweaky,
last year.
Maybe.
I think what, you know, what this
seven
guy came
people?
Up with, you know, probably is...
Sounds good.
Is going to, you know, is going to be pretty close to what you see. Now, the only thing that could change that is the citizenship question, of course.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if that citizenship question stays in the census, then we could see, you know, different numbers in some neighborhoods. You never know.
That would seem like it would almost
go
against
opposite,
what they wanted to do.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I know there's, Dave's right. I mean, like I said, what's his name's report on the economic forecast? Peter Rupert, we the population changed 7 people last year, and I think the year before it changed 11. So it's not like...
But the demographics of where they live...
But the demographics of where they live could conceivably change. Although even though that, I don't know that that's...
Yeah, probably not much.
...changed remarkably.
I think that...
Yeah, there's some, you know, I think that's the potential for the biggest change is kind of the gentrification question.
Yeah.
You know, is how much in terms of income level and race might you see neighborhoods changing, you know? That can happen over decades' time. So if NDC used, you know, 2010 census information, you know, 10 years later, we could have a little bit different picture in certain neighborhoods. That and the citizenship question. You know, it's a question for us, for me, you know, in terms of, you know, we've got a staff person assigned to this right now, working with the county. And, you know, in the end, it's going to be probably some work and some money that the city is being asked to contribute and our staff time in order to get the word out and get people to participate. And if that census question, citizenship question is in there, you know, do I really want to bang our heads against the wall and have our staff doing a whole bunch of work when the thing inherently works against us, you know, in terms of getting people out there, just distrust the whole thing? So I'm not sure. If that remains in there, I'm inclined to tell the county, thanks, but, you know, we're not inclined to invest in a process that's flawed. It's just going to frustrate all this work that you're planning. Good work, you know, but it's going to all be all for naught, I fear. So, interesting. And there's lots at stake. Lots
of
money.
Can we circle back to that second piece of legislation? That
yeah.
About?
And so that is, it's SB 139. It doesn't currently apply to cities. So that's the caveat there.
Okay.
But we don't know what will happen once it goes through the whole legislative process. And it's called the People's Map Act.
And how does that differ from the first one?
So it requires counties with 250,000 or more residents to establish independent redistricting commissions to draw district lines using the FAIR criteria. So I think that the key point here is that they require the creation of these independent redistricting committees, which is really a separate process and a lot more process than going through it at the ad hoc subcommittee and then city council.
But is that on a county jurisdiction level or does it apply to cities?
It doesn't currently apply to cities,
yeah.
This legislation.
Even large ones.
But, correct, but cities can do, they can undertake the independent redistricting commission process if they choose to. I think it's, you know, time and cost that is are some of the factors there. So we'll see, you know, we'll be following both of these pieces of legislation and see how they change, if they change, if they die, if they keep going forward. So
then theoretically if that law goes through, if that passes, then it would be a separate group designing our redistricting map rather than us.
Not currently. So SB 139 does not apply to cities. If it were changed to apply to cities, then we'd have to go through the independent redistricting commission process, which I don't know if any local entities have gone through that process.
They've had sort of independent charter review commissions that address this. That's what Ventura and Santa Barbara did because they needed charter amendments as charter cities to create these new districts. We haven't looked specifically at a general law city and whether they did the same similar commission structure.
So it's similar though to what the state is now doing with the independent redistricting rather than having the state legislature take that out? Is that your understanding?
That's what preliminary understanding
is aiming for.
Right.
Gotcha.
Some sort of independent body rather than the legislature.
Right. Sorry.
But you can kind of get a framework
with
that, right? In terms of the choices of process that your committee has. You know, one end of the spectrum is total independence, you know, and having, you know, you just say, we're going to set up a process where some independent body does all the nuts and bolts mapping work. The other is kind of the thing like this NDC guy was talking about where, yeah, I start off and I draft a map that ensures that each of you is remains in a seat, you know. So those are the two ends of the spectrum in terms of, and that involves process. So you, by making decisions about how you're going to approach the process, you're kind of, it's a filter by which those maps start out. Doesn't mean they stay that way, but that's a beginning of a process. So something to think about in terms of how you want to get this work done.
Okay, so right now this is preliminary stuff, so the next step would be once we're here,
the next step is to get the consultant on board, you know, who can work in conjunction with our in-house experts, Fidella and Jenna and Mac, and really start to put together the choices for you guys to make and really to tee those up for you, and then you know, we can, if necessary, take decisions to the council from there. Certainly we're going to need to get funding to enter into a contract with a consultant and, you know, make those kind of decisions. And then, you know, really work with that consultant to craft an outreach program and a step and schedules that lead us into the actual mapping decisions in the 2022 election and that sort of thing.
And I think that, you know, the in the near term, the outreach decisions, getting the consultant on board, having the consultant help us draft up a very general process and sort of draft timeline, and then talking about upfront outreach or what we're going to be dealing with in the near term. I think, you know, really coming up with district boundaries at this point, we want to get our census data back. And then also, you know, there's currently legislation pending. I think each year we're going to see different bills that are going to be pending and potentially changing things. And so we don't want to get too far ahead of the ball and then, you know, create a map or, you know, draft a map based on certain criteria that we then have to go back and change. So there'll be there'll be go time after we get our census data up leading up to the 2022.
What kind of time?
Go time. Very legal term.
I think that's a Seinfeld reference.
So once we have that, then we would have what, 10 months to get it?
So I think fall.
So the census.
Spring, fall 2021 is when we think we'll get the census data. So then.
Spring, fall 2021.
Well, so it's fall 2020, I believe, spring 2021.
That's a little tight.
Oh, fall 20, spring 21. Oh, that's a little.
Yeah, because I know I understand it takes about a year.
The fellow that we talked
about. May? Did he say May?
The city of Santa Barbara and
21?
The city of Oxnard went through the process in 3 months.
Yeah, the fellow we talked to on the phone said he thought the information would start getting out in chunks as early as May of 2020. So hopefully that's the case.
Yeah, that would be great.
We have to work into that also when we have to get the maps to the elections office. So we have to put that into our timeline as well.
And that's the summer before the elections, right? So it's like July.
You know, I haven't reached
thing.
Out to them just yet regarding this. I wanted to first go through this process before I even contact.
So our election is November
2022. Mm-hmm.
2022.
So we have most of 2022,
right.
You know, which we should have all the census data, and depending on when we need to get everything to the county. When did the city of Santa Barbara do their resolution?
Is that a 3 or a 2-member election?
Santa Barbara?
2022.
It's a 3.
Three. Yeah.
So they went through their resolution process in June 2018. June 20th. They adopted the resolution sending everything to the county, I think, June 20th, 2018, to get on everything on the November.
But they're an odd year.
Yeah.
Right, but just getting things to the county. So I think we have, you know, the elections are in November. So we need to.
Well, we typically, on a normal, with non-districting, I get my information to them in June.
Right.
But they need to set up their process based on the districts. So they may need a little bit more time.
Right, but I think that, that when the city of Santa Barbara set up their districts, I believe that they just did that. They got everything to the county in June also.
But, well, we'll have to just make sure, because I think they're off cycle than what we are. So they're focused on Santa Barbara, whereas with us, we've got lots of cities that they're focusing, and districts as well.
I understand, So,
that's right.
Yeah.
They're the odd man out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're phasing in, though, to be on even years as well.
So
next meeting, is there anything else you wanted to cover? We can talk about a next meeting date.
I'd like to ask, as of now, are these meetings open to the public then, or they're not? Or, I mean, I'm here, and I want to continue to be here. So I don't know how we're all figuring to set this up.
Yeah, that's a choice to be made.
Do you want to have official public members? Do you want to just have it as,
With the library committee, what did we add by the time our ad hoc
committee? Yeah, so library committee, we were faced with a similar question, and because they don't have to be public, because as Jenna noted, they're ad hoc. But so the committee decided that it would form a working group. So it's the committee is the committee that might meet on their own occasion, but so far they've been meeting along with a working group that will presumably work on the nuts and bolts and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's the committee and working group.
So what's the purpose of having a separate committee taking a vote? I mean, having the committee as opposed to the working group.
Well, I
think the committee would meet to make to do the vote.
Yeah, just that it's not a total free-for-all open public meeting, because the only, I guess, disadvantage of just making it open to the public is you might turn these ad hoc committee meetings into the mapping meetings that you should be going on at a city council meeting. So it's, if you get a lot of interest, maybe more interest than you might anticipate, but you could have a room full of people and you're hashing out, and maybe that's a good thing. But that might be the only disadvantage of having it, throwing it open to the general public. But if you wanted to invite stakeholders and different groups and have a working group, that's one way to kind of manage that public input in a way for your committee's work, which you guys can decide exactly, shaping it. But the council gave some direction that I thought was the purpose of the committee is to shape the process. And then kind of let the process happen, not necessarily to run the process, but to draft the process, and then, now the process can occur. So, but that's up to you. If you want to keep your hand in the process and meet, you can do that too, or you can structure a process where you guys kind of draft it, bring it to the council, they approve it, and then you set your child loose.
So in that last one, that this committee would just meet as far as till we got things set up. And then there wouldn't be a committee anymore.
Right. Which is kind of the purpose of an ad hoc committee.
Yeah.
I'm confused. Sorry.
The working group for the library committee is probably about 7 people?
Yeah, I don't know if they'll all stay on there.
They're mostly friends of the library or friends of the library, or in one case, we have a representative from the county on it. So it's Dave, myself, Roy, representative from the county, Darcell, and people from friends of the library that are involved.
So you have a working group.
But then if we came to some conclusion as to what to present, correct me if I'm wrong, what to present to council, it would be a decision of the committee. Ad hoc committee, which would be Roy and I, after all of us discuss.
It's really the working group is really to serve the committee. And in the case of the library committee, I think for an example of the working group is expected to help with is we're going to seek consultant services there, and we expect to send out an RFP, and so they'll help us review and draft an RFP. they'll maybe sit on a panel when we get, if we get, we're expecting hopefully to get multiple proposals to, you know, interview or vet out application or proposals from consultants. So it's, you know, that would be, you know, a role for a working group, is to help, you know, a committee with that process. And then, but the committee is going to ultimately make a recommendation to the council on which consultant, and, you know, recommend a budget and that sort of thing.
So when I was on the general plan update committee in 2000, make that 1997 to 2000, so that was set up so it was all the planning commissioners, one or two representatives from city council, and then two public members who were, you know, thought to be kind of like opposing interests in the community, and they were voting members on the committee. So it's kind of like that's,
and that was subject
to
the Brown Act.
Pardon me?
That would have been subject to the Brown Act.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But they worked. They worked for 3 years, and you know, they did all the notifications and all the stuff, and nobody ever came until they finally advertised, you know, this is it. We're gonna roll this out. This is the public's chance to come and react.
I guess my confusion is that there are some decisions that can be made more upfront, like the 4 district versus the 5. I mean, I'm not saying to make that decision today, but I'm just saying that's a conversation that could be had, and it seems to me I would want to have more input rather than less on what does that mean. And if you look at what Goleta did with their, you know, work group, which is their public engagement committee, council, whatever they call it, I think it's 18 people are on that. And they went through all of these different decisions, elected mayor, not elected mayor. If it's an elected mayor, is it 2 years or 4 years? Actually, they ended up voting on that for the district. But, I mean, they looked at all this stuff and then was able to kind of hash through what are the implications of this, what are the implications of this, and then bring it to the council for their consideration. And it just seems to me that I'm hoping that you seek more public involvement rather than less, because I think that was the whole purpose of, I mean, if we really look at, and I know you were, you know, pushed into this, and I understand that, but we're here, and so I would like us to embrace it and try and meet, you know, the desires of the community that, you know, is feeling like they're not involved. And so I would like to see at some point as saying, yes, but, you know, let's get more involvement, whether it's opening it up and having, let's say we want 5 people from the community to be, you know, whatever shape that takes, I don't know, but I would hope that it wouldn't just be a really closed kind of, because I think that really defeats the objective.
Yeah, and I don't think of it as being closed. I think of it as being, when do you want to do the work, you know, and cook this and get the public's input. It sounds like in Goleta's case that they did a lot of that work and public outreach, getting public involvement via this committee, kind of almost fully cooked the thing and then delivered it to the council, where the council could then sit up there and have confidence that, boy, because all these people participated at that level, we can just, you know, rubber stamp this thing almost, you know, bless it and say that's good to go, because we have that's one way to approach it. But it doesn't mean that a process where the committee might do work by itself, and I'm not saying that that's right or wrong, but the committee might do work itself and then bring it a process to the council, and then the council holds these public meetings where they invite everybody and get participation, couldn't be, have the same, you know, good result. It's just, it's a different place of doing that work, and it's up to you guys to decide, what do you think is most most effective? What where do you want to get that work done? I think either way, you know, we'll support you in either way, however you want to do it as a committee, but those are for sure choices to be made.
And just to clarify, these meetings do have to be held regardless. So mm-hmm. they're required right. regardless if there's a, you know, robust commission process. We still have to go through the, you know, the two mapping criteria
yeah.
public meetings, and then the two map review public
meetings. And then the last one being
right.
a public city
the
council.
The final hearing to adopt the ordinance with the districts, yeah.
There's nothing to preclude having full city council meetings to resolve each of these, having agenda items for some of these smaller issues, whether to get guidance from both the public and the whole council on how the process needs to evolve. We just need to comply with these final meeting requirements.
So I think it's the scope of kind of what your committee is interested in. How you'd like to move forward.
I don't know about Al, but I would be comfortable with something similar to the library working group in the fact that maybe we have Lisa, we might have Gail involved, but it would be nice if we would get, what was his name, Frank Ochoa, Chatsibe. It would be nice to get maybe one of the parties that was pushing this initially to just be present at this initial table.
At the working group
table. At the working group table. I still think that in the end, you know, what got presented to council would probably, Al and I would probably, in the end, present that to council, but I think having a couple more people and creating a working group would be a little easier, because I would like to get input from that group that pushed this whole thing. To start with, because it seems to me that they kind of dropped the ball, because they pushed this thing forward and then we haven't seen them really since. And
well, maybe they're just waiting for this to get going.
You know, but again, you know, it'd be nice to be able to reach out to have, you know, I'd be very comfortable with a working group of five or six people. You know, Al, myself, Lisa, Gail, a couple of the folks from this group. That would be a comfortable working group. And then Al and I would still decide in the end, after working and all of us kind of getting together, determining what went to council. Because I think that's a good way to go about it. It's inclusive, but it doesn't get where you've got so many people that too many cooks, you kind of have so many different opinions, and it's hard to get stuff done.
So that would be happen before these, this one, before all these public hearings?
Yeah.
Okay, and so that, I don't know, I guess in a sense doing that we would you get more buy-in. I mean, they would feel like they were part of the decision-making process if they get invited in at an earlier time.
Yeah. You know, it'd be harder. It would be, if you do that, then you would, I think, run much less risk of them coming back to you later saying, well, that wasn't what we wanted. You know, if there's that immediate involvement. I don't know where these people, to be honest with you, I've run into one of them one time since that initial meeting. And that was at a Women's Political Committee luncheon. That's the only time I've seen her in the ensuing, what has it been, since 2017.
Okay, well, we'll take your direction if you want us to reach out to, I think we have the names of those folks who live in the settlement.
Well, I mean, I'm still undecided. I don't know. Because if we're, what are the decisions we would have them participate on?
I think that's something that your ad hoc committee could help scope.
Because I don't want to, I don't think we want to get anywhere near the map.
No.
At this, at
not
this
at
early
this point,
stage.
No.
You know, especially because since we can't.
Certainly the outreach, that would certainly help to have.
Yeah, yeah. It would help in the outreach if we had that, that involvement at a working group
right.
level.
Yeah, why don't we, and one of the things we can do when we reach out to a consultant again is have them come here. Maybe they can kind of help us articulate what are the decision points and what are the decisions
yeah,
out there. You know,
that,
we covered
that
some of
good.
Them today.
Let's do
but,
that.
You know,
just checking when you want me to flip it over.
Just 5 or 10 minutes. We're just wrapping up. Annie, thanks. So, you know, the mayor question, four versus five districts, you know, outreach, those kind of things. So they can help us kind of really understand. Yeah, you've covered them all. Those are the decisions you can make at this early stage or at least talk about making. So maybe that's a next meeting kind of a thing is to invite the consultant, have a discussion with him, have him kind of walk through how he sees this opportunity we have, which I understand is kind of unique, that we have this period of time to do the work and kind of help us think that through.
Yeah.
So for that next meeting, do you want us to reach out to some of the folks that filed the thing or wait till we have the meeting with the consultant and then maybe plan that for next? I wasn't clear on what you had in mind.
Well, I think it would be good to meet with the consultant first.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think there's real advantage to get those people involved, but I'm sure, I think, you know, at this sort of very...
But the consultant will know which direction to take to do that.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, set out some, here are some good decisions to be put to the working group. These are some...
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a recommended scope for the working group, et cetera.
Yeah.
And maybe
instead of just leaving it open and the working group says, no, we won't do that part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and also we've just introduced this notion of a working group, so maybe between now and the next meeting you can think about, you know, yes, we working group candidates, you know, people have shown interest, Lisa Gale, this group that filed the Voting Rights Act, maybe can't, who else? Are there other stakeholders that you might, you know, between now and the next meeting, think about that might sit, you know, one or two other members in the community so it doesn't get too large.
Right.
I agree with that. That might be, you know, important to have represented on kind of a working group. So something to think about.
Okay. So next meeting.
Well, depending on the consultant.
Yeah, it depends pretty much on the consultant.
In part, yeah, but what time is reasonable to come back to you? 2 weeks, a month? What do you think?
Well, I think when it's really at the pleasure of the consultant almost, huh?
Yeah, but sooner versus later. I don't know what his availability is going to be like.
Sooner, you know. Within the next month?
Yeah. Well, again, you know, whenever...
So if we want to start off having this group meet monthly, maybe we can agree to that. And then for this, getting the consultant here, we'll be flexible in terms based on his schedule.
Yeah.
Okay. So the monthly meetings at the beginning sound all right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll look at a July meeting and when the consultant can make himself available.
And I just got to say this because I wouldn't sleep well if I didn't. The NDC group that said, oh, we can make the map so everybody keeps their seats, that just makes the hair on my neck stand up. I mean, that is so, in my point of view, totally against the whole goal of this. And it's very self-serving.
No, I think
for,
we would dismiss that.
Thank you. Thank you. I just had to say it because I was like... Whoa. That would not.
Yeah, I think, that was my initial reaction too. It's like, what? Man, that seems to be contradicting the purpose of this. But
yeah.
I think the way it was explained was that that's a starting point. And to see if you can have fair districts and still have everybody starting off in their seats.
I'd rather start with the fair districts and then see if they happen to live in them.
No, I'm going to volunteer to not run next time, and so that kind of that's out the window.
Right.
Yeah, I just want to clarify, I'm not defending the guy.
Yeah,
that's
but
that,
I...
But that was an assumption that, you
well, and it
you
also goes to whether, these allegations and the lawsuit isn't proven yet, right? We decided to settle without proving up whether or not there was a fair point, and these lawsuits were, threatened all across the state. And so it's a lot of it is, maybe there are probably a lot of, without having district elections, which their at-large elections are still in compliance with the CVRA in terms of where. So
right.
I think that's the premise, yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
We'll be right back here in another hour and a few minutes.
Yes. We'll see you then.
Yep.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for coming.
I'm going to go home, Fidel, and see if there's any letters I haven't read yet.
Yeah, I kind of.
You're going to give up your parking spot, huh?
Yeah.
I'm just kind of,
yeah.
It's like a river flowing.